Real people. Real opinions. Real talk radio. The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Show. Ireland's classic
hits. Leon Buston is a fully qualified personal trainer and athlete based in Norwich in the UK. He not only helps his clients achieve their own fitness goals, but he also takes part in ultramarathons. I bet you've never heard of them before. Ultramarathons. And huge mental and physical challenges. After the COVID-19 pandemic, Leon decided to run 250 kilometres across Sri Lanka. And if that wasn't good enough, in October 2022, he then ran another 250 kilometres across the Wadi Rum Desert in Jordan. He now shares what he has learned about running in extreme heat and for long periods of time, and how he managed to do it. He thought that was the end of these huge challenges, but back in March he announced that he would be running the length of Great Britain, which is 1,300 kilometres, 800 miles to you and me, in the old money, as they say, in 14 days. You'd struggle to do that in your car. But anyway, he's going to do it in 14 days. And he's doing it for the Reorg charity, which helps support veterans, military and emergency services, both mentally and physically through fitness. He managed to complete it in 13 days, 15 hours and 5 minutes on August the 6th of this year. And he joins me on the line. Leon, hi, how are you?
I'm very well. What a great intro.
I'm surprised you're still alive. I'm surprised you're alive after that. Leon, can I just tell you, I walk from here to my house and I'm exhausted.
I don't know how far away your house is, so let's just say that it's really far. It's at least
1,500 meters, probably.
Oh, there we go. It's a good kilometer and a half. It's good.
Leon, I mean, it takes a lot to do what you're doing, and that's to the extreme. Most people probably wouldn't be capable of it. When I was a young man, I did run a marathon, and I ran a few 10Ks and stuff like that. I wouldn't be able to do it now. I'm 60 years of age. I'm not fit enough. I smoke. I'm in probably not in great health. Well, I'm okay, actually. I feel not too bad, but I'm probably not keeping it up. So what advice, firstly, would you give to somebody like me who hasn't done anything like that in years?
I think the biggest piece of advice, which is one of the main reasons I use, it's quite awkward, obviously, coming off the back of a social media conversation. but one of the things I actually use my social media to champion is, I don't like people feeling they have the pressure nowadays to actually commit to something, even like a marathon. You know, I think the statistic is maybe 1% of the world's population will actually complete a marathon distance in their whole life.
Yeah.
And we're now exposed to, you know, I've now fallen into this realm of ultra, extreme ultra, not just putting your shoes on and going out for 5-10 minutes. And I feel like there's a lot of pressure on a lot of people to feel like in order to even just have fun and enjoy it, they have to commit to a marathon at the minimum nowadays. And my biggest piece of advice is make sure that whatever it is that you decide to do, you're doing it for the right reason. You're not doing it to impress your friends. You're not doing it because you feel the pressure from social media. And for some people, it might be doing what I've just done. You know, good luck.
Yeah, fun. Yeah.
But for others, it could literally just be lacing up and going for a walk with friends for 10, 20 minutes, 2 or 3 times a week. You know, I think it's just a case of make sure that you're doing it for you, and whatever your challenge is or whatever your mountain is, you know, as long as you're having fun along the way and you're learning a lot about yourself, then have at it.
I mean, the 800 miles, I mean, yeah. I'm blown away. You know, the fact that you did it in 13 days, 15 hours and 5 minutes. I'm just trying to figure it out, calculating in my head how many miles a day it was. But I'm assuming that meant you were running for practically the whole day, obviously stopping for something. Or did you eat on the run?
Yes. Yeah, so mathematically, I work in kilometers over here. So we were averaging between 94 and 100 kilometers a day. So if I always work in marathons, because that's a lot easier for people to calculate. So a marathon is 42 kilometers. So we were doing between 2.25 and 2.5 marathons a day, which was kind of scary when I started to mathematically work that out beforehand. But the way it would work, we'd get up around 5 a.m., get some food down, quite light food at that time in the morning. And then I would have like a basic fueling strategy, which would be predominantly water and electrolyte based for the first few hours. And then I would have some carbohydrates mixed in with that liquid because it was a lot easier to get down than chewing while I'm running. And then we would meet my sub team. I say my sub team like it's a huge person. It's just one person in my van. every 10 to, on average, 10 to 12 kilometers, where we would restock my support crew who would be on the bike or running alongside me, would just carry the bits and pieces, get some bananas, fruit, whatever I was going to eat, little snacks and bits and pieces. And then normally around 50 to 60 kilometers in, I would sit down for around 45 minutes, which, to be honest, was the worst part of the day, because once you've run 60 kilometers, your body doesn't want to get back up again to do another.
I was going to say, you know, yeah, it was once you stop, you kind of don't want to go again, do you?
No. Yeah, it was like watching Evolution of Man in like a 5 minute period, going from walking with poles to suddenly.
Were you not tempted to take a detour around the drive through of McDonald's every now and again? No.
Yeah, well, we did definitely. We visited a McDonald's. The thing is, with ultra, when you're doing something that big, calories become more important than macronutrients, or like what we call pure nutrition. It comes down to essentially trying to get on as much calories as you can. And unfortunately, in the nutritional world, that when it comes to calorie density, it's normally from fast foods and high fat foods, and not the most favorable of sources sometimes. So I think by the end of it, on average, I was burning between 10 and 12,000 calories a day, and managing to consume around 4,500 to 5,000 without feeling a little bit sick. So I did end up actually losing 8 kilos over the 13 and a half days. So there's a new diet for anyone out there if they want it, but it's not.
I wouldn't recommend it as a diet, but however, yeah. I mean, I was going to say that because it is, I mean, just to warn people who are going to attempt something like this, it is dangerous. I mean, it's really dangerous.
Yeah.
Did you consider that beforehand? Was there people saying to you, oh, look, don't do it, Leon? You know what I mean? Whatever you've done in the past, okay, we'll deal with that. But listen, this is a bit much. You know what I mean?
I think, unfortunately, once you've dipped your toe into the ultra world and you've come out okay, people naturally start to back you a little bit more and just kind of go, yeah, he's just doing his thing. You know, and there's always, also as well, there's always someone doing something bigger. You know, a friend of mine has literally just ran the entire width of America, which was 3,000 miles, and did it in 50-odd days. So when I first said about it, you know, there has been people who have completed it. So nobody kind of, apart from my wife, who always cares for my safety more than anyone, even myself.
She just puts up with you, yeah, this age, yeah.
She was more concerned about, you know, my body afterwards, because my training has always been, as well as my career, it's been a tool for my mental well-being as well as my physical well-being from my teen years. So her worry was, I know what you're like when you've got an injury and you can't train for 6 weeks. And her biggest concern was, am I going to sustain a life-changing injury? You know, but
Were you being watched? I know you have a lot of subscribers on YouTube and a lot of followers on social media. Were you being watched? Was this all kind of done live on social media? Were you kind of giving them updates every day, or how did that work out?
So I had a film crew. They filmed a documentary, which I'm going to be releasing next year. I did a little bit on social media, but to be completely honest, you're on your feet for between 12, 13, and the longest day was 22 and a half hours. So my lowest consideration was social media coverage. Like with YouTube and stuff, I don't really use YouTube that much anymore. It's predominantly Instagram. And I just had the film crew chuck together like a 10-second taster piece each day that I could share. And then every now and again, I would put up a photo where I'd share some deeper thoughts. But to be completely honest, I was so exhausted that was
I'm looking at your YouTube channel here, okay? And I'm just scrolling up and down through it, okay? So I see different images of you at different stages, right? Not of the particular run, but just different stages over the last few years. And I see physically how different you look in each one. Your weight, well, I can only see your face really, from the shoulders up, but I can see from your face that your weight fluctuates so much up and down. So I imagine that's from each individual run, you lose a lot of weight, and then you have to work obviously on putting that weight back on again.
Yeah, sometimes as well, like the timeline on YouTube can be quite all over the place. So if you think of the time, and maybe 10 or 11 years I've been on social media, I was bodybuilding back in the day, traditional bodybuilding split. So a lot more, you know, your standard muscular aesthetic physique, lower body fat. And then I went into CrossFit and it was a little bit more of a full physique, a little bit bigger. And then I was kind of dipping my toe between the ultra runs and then back into weightlifting. And now, well, I've literally just come from a jiu-jitsu session. I do a lot of jiu-jitsu now. and then a little bit of conditioning alongside it. So my body kind of just tells the story of the way in which that I'm using it nowadays, which is something that I actually, you know, champion for everyone. I'm like, don't try to change your body to fit an image. Let your body just do, you know, follow the way in which that you like, you choose to train. And, you know, I look after
I'm also looking at the fact that you, when you ran the length of Great Britain, at least you're running on roads and footpaths and it's reasonably flat. And I'm watching you here running through the desert in Sri Lanka, and it's pretty rough. I mean, and everybody knows what it's like compared to, you know, when you're running on the flat, it's a lot easier. But when you're running through rocks and gravel and mountains, and I mean, that must, and the heat, you can, all I have to do is look at you with your fancy sunglasses on you there. The heat must have been searing. So, because if you're going to do a marathon, everybody who does a marathon prays that the weather's going to be reasonably, you know, not warm anyway. Certainly you want to tepid, right?
20 degrees, they want.
Yeah, basically, yeah. So, I mean, you were running in, I don't know what the temperature there was, but I'm assuming it was well into the 30s.
Yeah, so the way that they would set it up is you would be off latest 6:30 a.m. because they wanted you to be able to run in as minimal heat as possible for as long as possible. But it was 20-25 degrees by 8:30 in the morning, and then it was peaking around 38 to 42, I believe. And the long day, you know, the long day, we left at 5 a.m. in the morning in the dark with head torches, and you were doing 74-75 kilometers. So you were out for 10 and a half hours, and that was a very, very hot day. But
does the sand make it more difficult? Though I know you got good gear on you, you got good runners and everything else, but I can see the footprints in the sand. Does the sand make it more difficult?
Yes. The sand just makes it irritating. So you have the way that they talk about it is three grades. Grade one is like a gravel track. Grade two is partially soft sand, partially hard pack, and then grade three is full dune, like if you were on a beach.
Yeah, and, that's really hard to run in. Yeah.
That's really hard. You have to run a different way. So normally we would say to run towards the midfoot contact when you put your foot down to get that spring out of each step. But when you were running on sand, you would have to try and run with a flat foot. And what I actually did, I didn't tell any of the athletes this, so anyone who's going to do it, you've got an insight. I would find someone from the top two or three who were in front of me who had a similar gait to me, and I would actually run in their footprints.
Okay, look at you, you cheese.
They packed the sand down, so I would run in their footprint, so I wouldn't think so much. So
and hopefully their leg length was the same, so the stride would be the same. Yeah, absolutely. And is there ever a moment, I mean, you talked about getting up when you did the length of Britain, right? So you get up in the hotel in the morning. Was there ever a morning where you said, oh, feck this, I just, can't do it anymore, can't do it? Was there?
Yeah, I've openly said that this challenge was there was a period of time in the middle, 4 or 5 days, where if it had been 14 days, I would be essentially reading I would be ticking every box for clinical depression in my mind, from being a GP referral specialist back in the day, where I was looking after different clients who were struggling in those clinical ways. I didn't have any change of mood. I didn't smile, I didn't laugh, I didn't have fun, I didn't have a positive thought. Nothing changed in a positive sense for around 4 days, where it was just pure exhaustion, hallucinations, just so much pain that, and you, for some reason, you know, it was lucky that I had the right charity, but we just kept moving forward, and it became this robotic death march for 3 or 4 days, where every single day I didn't want to get up. And then, to be honest, you know, after the first day, nobody wants to get up and run 100 kilometers every day. Nobody wants to go to bed with that level of anxiety of having to run 100 kilometers the next day. And, you know, anyone out there who tells you any different, in my opinion, is probably lying.
Yeah, well, I suppose from your point of view, success was your aim then at that stage. I suppose when you're halfway through it, you kind of think, in for a penny, in for a pound. I don't want to fail at this stage.
Yeah, it kind of gets to a point where once we got into England and we were 400-500 kilometers in, I know we still had, you know, another 700-750 kilometers to go. But it sounds quite strange. But once you're that far in, it feels like, well, you might as well just keep going.
Yeah, I'm at the point of no return.
Yeah, at this point, it's like, well, find out how far you can go. And for me, it wasn't it wasn't about completing it. It was about finding my edge. And I wanted to find how far I could possibly go and find my point. And, you know, in some ways we found it in terms of my overall physical capabilities. We didn't find it, but trust me, I won't be going any further to find that.
Well, here's the thing I was going to say to you. So you finished that one, right? And, yeah. You know, I'm sure the wife and everybody was concerned about you, concerned about your health. You get yourself back to good health again. 2 or 3 weeks later, you've recovered. I don't know how long it takes to recover from these things, but I'm imagining 2 or 3 weeks in, you're probably recovering well from a bit of weight back on you. Did you then say, what's the next one? What's the next big challenge? And it's got to be more than 800 miles. Is that what you were thinking?
No, definitely not. For me, my last 2 years or 2.5 years now, from the start when I first did a 50K and then did the 250s last year, everything that I have done training-wise has been structured. So I am obviously a qualified coach, but I bring in a team to look after me, because I think the power of a coach is not just in terms of the physical preparation, the periodization. It's actually having someone to bounce ideas off. And also as well, I know myself, I can get around myself. So coaching myself would have been a terrible idea. But I got to the end of this one, and I'm actually right now, I'm about to go over to Munich and run a Munich marathon next week, which is for a different sponsor. So that will be my first actual run, proper run since. But I've not structured anything. I've just been going into the gym, lifting weights, enjoying the freedom of lifting weights, doing 6 or 7 hours of jiu-jitsu classes a week.
Yeah, well, a standard marathon is nothing to you. I mean, to do 26 miles, that's kind of that's a walk in the park to you.
I hope so. You know, this is where the humbling begins again. You know, I've ran 3 or 4 times since I've recovered, and I think the most time on foot I've spent is about 1 hour and 20 minutes. So the marathon will be hard. You know, the thing that's really unforgiving with any form of fitness or conditioning, as soon as you start to ease off the gas, things get hard real quick. So I still think the marathon will be a very hard distance, you know, to anyone, whether I'm running every single day or I've not run for 6 months. The marathon is still a bloody long time.
You've no plans in the future to do something bigger than you've already done, no?
Right now.
Like across America.
No, there's no plans to go further. For me, this kind of running has always been exploratory. And I must admit, doing this one for 14 days, it wasn't just 14 days. It was 6 months of preparation. It was
hell.
3 weeks in total with the event. And then another week and a half when I got back of being quite useless. I've got a 4-year-old daughter as well. And my son is on the way due in November. And
congratulations.
Thank you very much. For me, the balance of everything is really quite important in my household. And these indulgences are very selfish. You know, I'm not getting paid to do these events. It cost, I think in total, it's cost me around £25,000 to actually build this whole event.
I know you did them for charity as well. Did you not get a sponsor or to cover your costs?
No, none of my sponsors helped financially. That's a whole separate subject.
They were just providing you with drinks and stuff like that, was it?
Yeah, so you kind of get help in different ways. So for me, like, they're never going to be big events. That it's not my career, and when it's not your career and it's not massively benefiting your household, or you're not able to bring your family along, I just don't think it's fair to put them through that and be that distant for that period of time. So the thought of me doing one across America, it just doesn't compute, the thought of tripling that amount of time away from family. Don't get me wrong, it's an exciting prospect. I would love to do something like that. But my balance of life is a lot more important than my ego, I guess. It's probably the easiest way.
Well, I mean, nowadays people are doing stuff like that, for example. And what they're doing is they're making money out of it by, I suppose, pay-per-view online, or people are subscribing to them or donating to them, you know, and people are, I mean, I've spoken to people who've done similar stuff to you, not quite as intense as that, you know, but road tripping, say, for example, across America. I had a couple on there a while ago. They were road tripping around the world, and these two are on Instagram and they're making a fortune.
Yeah, it's definitely an opportunity. For me, obviously, the documentary will be an opportunity to push it financially next year. But the thing is that's one direction. And with the pressure of trying to make money at the same time as doing something like that, I can only imagine the amount of stress. And some of the ultra athletes I've spoken to who have done similar endeavors, and then they're absolutely exhausted, hanging, and they've got to run 50 miles whilst running with a can hanging out of their hand, trying to get a sponsorship deal completed at the same time. And for me, that's just, there's enough to worry about rather as much as trying to keep sponsors happy. Because I know how it works. You have to get content and you have to create certain bits and pieces. And
yeah,
if it is,
I'm looking at some of the texts, by the way. People are texting in, you know, and they're, somebody's, Terry Ann says, not, I'm out of breath just listening to him. I ate a Mars bar halfway through my marathon in 1982.
Absolute legend.
Yeah, she said, why did Leon do these runs? Fair dues to him, but why? Well, I suppose it's just to see if you can do it, I suppose. That's really why, isn't it?
I think
challenge yourself.
I think the simplest answer is that I will be, it would be a very long story to go into it too much, to be honest, but I will say that there was deeper reasons. For me, I was also quite fearful of no disrespect to anyone, but I felt like once I first kind of became a father and really fell into my father role, I felt like a spark for competition and pushing myself really just died, and I really felt uncomfortable about it. And for me, I always I've always been a competitor, used to box, used to play football, used to do all those sort of things, and you kind of get a little bit of a spark, and then I stopped, and I just got curious. You know, COVID times and all that sort of stuff, we got stuck at home for a long period of time, and I came out feeling quite numb and was like, I don't know if I can go dark anymore. Not that it matters to anyone else. And I just wanted to find out if I still had a spark to kind of push and really dig deep. And that's where it all started. So did the 50, then did the 250s, and really enjoyed, you know, the breakdown and rebuild of it, both mentally and physically. And like I say, the exploration, you know, what a great way to run around a country, you know, running around Sri Lanka was beautiful. And then now, you know, I'll never want to see the A9 again. No disrespect to anyone up in Scotland, but that was horrific. But it was nice to see some of it.
Real people, real opinions, real talk radio. The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Show.